Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio at WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Jeremy Jennings, author of Travels with Tocqueville Beyond America. Jeremy, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be with you.
Alexis de Tocqueville made a famous trip to the United States in 1831, but where else did he go?
Well, that was the second foreign trip he made. The first one was to Italy, and in particular down to Sicily. And then after America, he very quickly came to Great Britain, and that included England and Ireland. He went to Germany, he went to Switzerland, he went to Italy. Oh, I should say, when he was in America, he also went up to what was then called Lower Canada, so Quebec. And also, most exotically, he went to Algeria several times in the 1840s.
And we'll talk about those trips, but remind us very quickly, why was the American trip so important and why is it so well remembered in the United States?
That's really interesting. I mean, you know, he was a bit of a loose end, you know. He was desperate for something to do, and he came up with this idea of going to America to actually study the prison system, the penitentiary system. That was the official pretext. And he used to arrive with his friend, Gustave de Beaumont. It's not quite clear when the idea of writing a book about America came to him. Did it was there beforehand or on their voyage over and so on and so forth? But it wasn't long before, within several weeks, if not months, in America, and he said, there's a book to write about this. And he did that, and he published the first volume in 1835, the second volume in 1840. When the first volume came out in 1835, he came to America in his early 20s. He was late 20s. And as soon as that book was published, Democracy in America, it was perceived as being unlike or better than and unlike any previous book written by a European about the United States. And it immediately had this sort of classic status. It was immediately translated and so on. And it was generally from that point onwards, has this reputation of being just about the best book written by a foreigner about the United States. And also, it's a book which can be read with great profit today. People still do read it. And it's not just a historical document. It's a document which I think still speaks to us, speaks to Europeans, but it also speaks to Americans. So it was quite an achievement and was recognized as such immediately upon publication.
What your book reveals that I knew nothing about is that he traveled to a lot of other places. Did he have a kind of wanderlust?
That's interesting. I've thought about this a lot, and obviously part of it is autobiographical and reflects upon this oneself and why does one travel and so on. I think with him, it's curious because he was a man who loved home and he loved his family home, which is up in Normandy, and he loved being with his wife and loved being with his family and so on. But he was also someone who really felt the need to travel and to see things. And one of the guiding principles of his work really was that he couldn't write about a place had he not been there. He had to go there. He had to see for himself. He was absolutely committed to that as a methodological principle. So, for example, he would have liked to have written books about Russia and India, but he never went there. And so he said, I can't do it because it'll just be secondhand and so on. So he really felt the need to travel, to see things, to learn in person. And when he went, he was always really, he was working all the time. Gustave de Beaumont said, you know, a wasted day was something he couldn't abide. Every day he'd wake up in the morning and say, right, today I'm going to see this person, I'm going to see that place. Taking notes all the time, sitting on a stagecoach taking notes, sitting on a steamboat taking notes, and so on. So it was something which he really did feel he had to do, and he enjoyed doing, despite the fact he was also frequently very, very ill when he traveled, but that's another story.
And how did he travel? There were no airplanes, there were no Airbnbs. Was it horses and trains? Was it hard?
It was hard, and one of the things I tried to bring out in the book is precisely how hard travel was. Even traveling around France, when he lived in, say, the north of Normandy, near the port of Cherbourg, and that, you know, would for him to get to Paris would probably take 2 days, and that would be by stagecoach, and then possibly take a boat down the River Seine to Paris, and so on. And so just even moving to get to the south of France from Paris would have taken 4 days, for example. Traveling across the United States, a lot of it was done on horseback. It was done in stagecoaches, which frequently broke down. It was done on steamboats and other forms of transport. The form of transport he most loathed was traveling by ship at sea, because he was always horribly seasick and on several occasions almost met a very sticky end in storms and so on. But no, travel, I think I wanted to write the book to remind people that traveling was jolly difficult in those days, and it was a brave thing to do. And I say, he was always ill. And when he went to Algeria, almost died in Algeria, and had to abandon his first trip to Algeria and so on. And the last trip he made was actually right down to Cannes in the south of France when he was ill. That last trip really killed him. He never recovered from that last trip from Paris down to Cannes, which was by stagecoach from Marseille. It took about 2-3 days, and it was in terrible weather. He was freezing cold, and he had tuberculosis, and he died not long afterwards.
He traveled to the United States, had his amazing insights on American democracy and society. He went to another English-speaking country, England. What did he see there? When did he go? What were his insights?
He came to England three times, twice in the early 1830s, so after he came back from America, and then again in the late 1850s, and that was the last foreign trip that he made. Why was England so important to him? You know, Tocqueville, as you know, and I think most of your listeners will know, was a French liberal. And French liberals, from Montesquieu onwards, but from before then, looked to England as this country of liberty. So they always had a soft spot for England. There was something special about England in the French liberal imagination. This was not the despotism of France. This was a country where people had trial by jury and so on. But there was another thing which absolutely fascinated him, because, again, your listeners will know the great thesis of democracy in America is that precisely that it's democracy as a political and social form which is the future. That is our future. And Tocqueville's theme is to Europeans, get used to this idea, because it will come one day and you've got to learn to live with it. But the thing that fascinated him about England, England actually seemed to be the country when that process of democratization was being held at bay. And that was because of the power of the English aristocracy. And that's what really fascinated him about England, and the extent to which that aristocracy, which was still politically very important, both at national and local level, that aristocracy could possibly continue to be the dominant political class in England, and which it did so, of course, right up until the First World War. I mean, it remains the dominant political force until then. So it was absolutely fascinated and by that. And of course, part and parcel of that was to make this comparison with what had happened to the French aristocracy, which effectively had rendered itself redundant, useless, etc. Whereas the British aristocracy was alive and well. The other thing which fascinated him was why he went to Ireland. And of course, he was very impressed by what he saw in England. And incidentally, he didn't just see the aristocracy. He went to the emerging industrial cities of Birmingham, Manchester, etc. But he also went to Ireland. He was deeply shocked by what he saw in Ireland, because no sooner had he arrived in Ireland than he saw a country that was being effectively oppressed by a foreign power. And the thing that's intriguing there, of course, is that he paints this glowing picture of the English aristocracy and a damning picture of the Irish aristocracy, whilst, of course, recognising that they were the same people, that the very people who made up this glorious English aristocracy were the very people like the Devonshires and so on and so forth, who were exploiting the Irish population to the point of virtual extinction. So he was really absolutely fascinated by England right the way through. And in the end, when the 1850s visit is interesting, because that's after he's published his second great book on the Ancien Régime. He's received in England as a great figure, and then he's able to speak with all the important politicians. Every door opens to him when he comes in 1857, and he can see whomever he wants to see. He sees the husband of Queen Victoria, Prince Albert, and so on. So he loved them. I mean, in the book there's an image of the Athenaeum Club in central London, where he was made an honorary member, and he absolutely adored that. He loved that side of English life.
You mentioned Algeria earlier, and that may be the most exotic place he visited, or at least the most alien to him, I'm thinking. What did he see and do there and learn?
And that's undoubtedly the most controversial part of his life, really. As you know, the French began their invasion and occupation of Algeria in 1830. And from the outset until the very end, in the early 1960s, it was a pretty disastrous undertaking. But it was part of the French effort to establish a second empire. Remember, they'd lost the first empire in the 18th century then under Napoleon. So they were trying to establish a second empire. And Tocqueville was very keen on this idea. He thought France was a great power, and a great power in those days had to have an empire. So Algeria was the first sort of step in building an empire. But I say from the beginning, it went badly wrong. And so he went there. He went there twice. He really looked long and hard at Algeria and didn't so much write publicly that much material, but lots of parliamentary reports. And so on. And I think what he saw there was he supported the project of colonization, but he saw a project that was, in a sense, completely inappropriate to the task in hand, which was essentially colonization via military control. And he thought that, you know, he was a liberal, and he thought that curiously France should try and establish a liberal regime in Algeria, and he saw that wasn't happening. So he was very perturbed on what he saw, disturbed, recognized. I think he came to recognize, as you say, alien is the right word, actually. This was the only country that he visited which was actually at war, and it was at war, and that clearly troubled him. But he came to appreciate the gulf which would exist between essentially the Christian European population and the Islamic Algerian population, and the realization that was probably a gulf that could not be overcome. So his writings are really quite pessimistic about Algeria. He wants France to successfully colonize Algeria, but recognizes the enormous difficulties that it's going to face. And it has to be said that in that context, he endorsed some pretty rigorous acts of repression by the French army of the indigenous population and so on, and that still is controversial to this day.
One more question, Jeremy. You are English. You teach politics at King's College London. How does an English guy become interested in Tocqueville?
Well, thank you for asking that question. It fascinates me as well, because I actually begin, I think I might say it in the acknowledgements of the book, that, you know, I'm 70 now. I first read Tocqueville when I was at school, would you believe, studying French history. Read him then. I can't believe I understood much about what he was saying. I was not that clever. But for some reason, France and things French have always interested me. I'm not a francophone as such, because I think that just means you're uncritically, you know, admiring of a particular country. But I've always, there's been something fascinating about it. And over the years, you can track it back actually over a long, long time. The sort of people that mostly I write about history of political thought, the sort of people that have interested me, I've been in the sense, you know, the anti-Jacobins, the anti-statists, and the French have got a long tradition of that. So that's why I've been interested in people like Montesquieu, Benjamin Constant, Raymond Aron, those sorts of figures, Albert Camus. I mean, that's the sort of the French tradition that I've been most interested in. And Tocqueville is a key figure in that tradition, a key transitional figure in that transition. But also, I think if you read him, you know, he writes beautifully. He's always got something interesting to say. His letters are magnificent. So I just think, you know, beyond that sort of intellectual interest in that particular intellectual tradition, I just think he's someone who rewards attention and reading. And I've never, you know, often I think people, when they write a book about someone, by the end they've had enough. They think, I'm not interested in this person anymore. Save me from him or her. I don't feel that with Tocqueville. I think it's time well spent. Let's put it like that. I feel enriched by my experience over the years with this man, and I've learned so much. And I think there is so much to learn from him. I think he's a truly great man, actually.
The author's Jeremy Jennings. The book is Travels with Tocqueville Beyond America. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.